WMFO, Medford. Unlike milk, long-distance telephone calls, and library books, there is no due date, tolls, or expiration in the grand hour. Starting a little early this morning, a few minutes early. But the first drama in this double bill is a request from a neighborhood psychotherapist. He is not a member of the Grand Hour fan club, but he requested an episode of The Whistler. And I had some in my collection. Interestingly enough, I never hear him whistling, the psychotherapist, on his Spaziergang. I don't really have any information on this other than this episode titled The Last Curtain. In terms of an original air date. So maybe I can try and snoop around for that while the show's playing. I'm going to try and get this in for the archive listeners without too much interference. So here we go, The Whistler. Actually, this is Arthur, and you're listening to The Grand Hour. Thanks.
And now The Whistler's strange story. Last Curtain.
The company's engagement at the Opera House in Los Angeles had 2 weeks to run. But Oriane Donati, whose beautiful voice was largely responsible for the success of the tour, had other things on her mind. Oriane was no longer thrilled by the curtain going up. She was not new to the music world. And moreover, when she allowed herself, she could feel the years inside. She didn't allow this often, of course, and certainly it was not being displayed at the moment. With Charles beside her, quietly reassuring, Oriane found it a simple matter to face the anger of the impresario, Giulio Cassini.
Have you lost your mind, Oriane? You cannot just tear up a contract. I'm protected by the law.
Law, law. There is only one law I recognize. I do as I please, and I will not desert my Charles.
And why should you, my dear? Do marry Charles, but remain with us for the season at least. Please, Carmilla.
It is impossible. Charles will not hear of it. We are both desperately in love. Am I right, my darling?
Yes, you're quite right, Oriane.
Oriane, please, reconsider.
Sorry, Julio, my mind is quite made up. Come, Charles. Let's go someplace where we can be alone.
By all means.
All right, play your games, but if you want my advice...
He was rather unpleasant, dear.
Julio, he only thinks of the money he will lose. Enough of him, though. Do you really love me?
Don't you know?
Yes, I suppose I do. That was nice, darling. Now I must go to my dressing room. Can you amuse yourself for a little while?
Yes, but do hurry back.
Yes, Oriane. At this point in your career, in your life, the most important thing is Charles and your love for him. You're thinking about this, aren't you, as you sit down before the mirror in your dressing room.
Mama.
What?
Mama.
Oh, Felice. How often have I told you not to call me Mama?
Oh, Mama.
What am I going to do with you? Oh, tell me. How are you coming along with your voice?
Very well. Professor Gresby is pleased with my progress.
What are you up to now?
I've just finished Faust. I'm to take up Martha next.
Oh, Martha, lovely. You know, Mr. Cassini has great hope for your future. Do you enjoy your work in the chorus, darling?
Very much. But, Mama, how long must this pretense go on?
Now, Felice, my baby, it will be over sooner than you think. I am going to be married.
Married?
Yes, cara mia, to a very fine, handsome, rich man. We shall all three of us be very happy.
Oh, Mama, when?
Soon, Felice. Very soon. Now, child. Yes?
1,000 pardons, my lady, but if you have the time, I should like a word with you.
I am very busy, Pippo. But, well, young lady, you run along now. I hope the advice I have given you will help you to amount to something.
Oh, it will, Madame Donati. And thank you.
Well? What is it, Pepo?
Please, Madonna, is it true what they are all saying? That you are leaving us, being married?
Yes, it's true.
Oh, no, my lady, no. You must remain. The opera needs you.
The opera? Go away, old man. Go to your world of props where you belong. You fatigue me.
Oh, you grieve me, Madonna. True, I am without physical grace and beauty, but, oh, please... In my heart, there is love.
Love? Love, indeed. Go away, buffo. Go down to your room where you belong and stay out of my life. Stay out of what does not concern you.
Pepo doesn't really annoy you, does he, Oriane? He only amuses you. But you're genuinely disturbed about your daughter, Felice. Because you haven't mentioned her to Charles, have you? Somehow, the opportunity has never been right. But you know there'll be plenty of time for that after you're married. And his love for you will make him understand anything. The following morning, Giulio sends for you, and he seems in a strangely happy mood when you enter his office.
Oriane, come in, come in.
Where are the papers? Canceling my contract?
On the desk, my dear. There's 6 copies. The sooner you sign them, the sooner you can start preparing for the great day.
You do not want me to perform tomorrow night?
Oh, not necessary at all, Carmi. Now, if you just sign the papers...
Giulio.
Yes?
Tell me, how is it that this morning you seem so agreeable? Only yesterday you were tearing out your hair, shouting you were ruined.
I have had a change of heart. I know about love. I know it cannot wait. I thought it over. After all, who am I to oppose Cupid, huh?
Giulio, you are lying. What has happened?
All right, you ask. This morning, Madame Brock signed with us.
Kitty Brock? You sign her before you cancel my contract?
Yes. Now, here are the papers. 6 copies signed at the bottom.
Sign nothing. Good day, Giulio.
Wait, Oriane, we must discuss this, please.
There is nothing to discuss.
The thought that Giulio has taken you at your word about leaving the company infuriates you, doesn't it, Oriane? That he would sign someone else before you've even given the final release on your contract. And of all people for him to choose, Kitty Brock, a woman you've never liked. Since you refused to cancel your contract, you continue to sing your roles. Then a few days later, you learn even more about Kitty. It's during a lull in the rehearsal while you're standing in the wings that Pepo, the property man of the company, whispers the unpleasant news in your ear.
My lady.
Huh? You? What are you doing sneaking about?
I would like to tell you how pleased I am that you remain with the opera after all.
Oh, go away, people.
No, it's a wise decision you make, Madonna. That porco is not worthy of you.
Porco? How dare you speak of my beloved in that manner? Go about your business, wretch. I must sing in a moment.
Yes, my lady, sing. Give your love to music. Do not waste it on him who deceives.
Deceives?
I speak the truth, my lady. It is him whom you would call husband that deceives you. He has been seeing her these past weeks. I know, I followed them.
Her? Who? Speak up.
It is the other. The one with the voice of a goat.
Kitty? Oh, no. Pepo, if you speak falsely, I kill you.
No. I speak the truth. Please. Even now, this very moment. Look, the third box to the left. They are together.
Oh!
Do you see, Madonna? They are not looking down at the opera. No, indeed. They look into each other's eyes.
No.
They are in love.
Oh, is it her design to make me out a fool? To take all that is mine? No. Oh, no, I shall not let her do that.
The worst has happened, hasn't it, Oriane? Charles and Kitty. The shock of it keeps you confined to your hotel rooms all the next day. And the evening's performance goes badly. And the day after that brings angry words between you and Giulio when he tells you that Kitty Brock is going to sing your role tonight, regardless of your contract. Later, the odd, strangely devoted little Peppo comes to your dressing room.
My lady.
Peppo, please, let me be.
Madonna, I beg of you, listen to what I have to say.
Oh.
Look, after tonight, Madame Brock will bother you no longer.
What are you saying, Peppo?
In the room where I keep my props, there is a mirror. A mirror especially created for the use of Madame Cazzana.
A mirror?
Yes. But, such a mirror. And so practical. You see, it was purchased for Madame Cazzana nearly 20 years ago by a man who was madly in love with her and very jealous.
Oh, come now. You're speaking in riddles, old man. Explain yourself.
Well, the mirror, the glass, was treated in such a way that a high-pitched trill or vibrato would instantly explode it in one's face. A just reward for vanity, Madonna, would you not agree?
Eh?
Especially if one is accustomed to singing into one's mirror, like the good Faust Margherita. Eh?
How is that you have come to possess this mirror?
Madame Cazzana was in love with another, so she gave the mirror to me.
You're dreaming, old man. If you were telling me the truth, you could not know of the mirror's treatment. Cazzana herself did not know.
But I do know. The jealous lover told me. When Cazzana sang Margherita and the mirror did not explode, the man came to see why. When I told him I had the mirror, he begged me to give it back for fear some innocent one would be hurt. But
you kept the mirror?
Yes. I was certain that someday it would serve its purpose.
Oh, get out of here, people.
This, then, is my reward for offering you happiness.
I told you to leave, Peppo.
Very well, my fine lady. But the next time, you will come to me.
Really?
You think no, Madonna? I shall be waiting for you. Downstairs in my room, with my props, where I belong. Where all the ugly things are kept.
You know in your heart there is only hatred for Kitty Brock, don't you, Oriane? And you wonder why you failed to take advantage of Peppo's offer. The more you think about it, the more you're certain Peppo told you the truth. The principle of shattering glass by vibration has been known for more than a century. And now you've sent him away, the only one who could help you. As you leave your dressing room and start down the circular stairway...
Oriane!
Oh, Charles!
Oriane, where have you been? I've tried to reach you.
Charles, you have to excuse me now. I must see Giulio.
Oh, wait, it's important. I have something to say to you.
Well, all right, but do hurry.
I hardly know how to begin. It's rather difficult to...
Charles, what is it?
Oriane... I must ask you to release me from my promise.
Release you?
Oriane, please don't hate me.
So it's true. The Brock woman, is it?
Yes. Yes, it happened all at once. It was sudden, overwhelming. Well, neither of us could help it.
Oh, Charles, you fool!
Wait!
It's finally happened, hasn't it, Oriane? You've lost everything. Though you're still under contract, Giulio has replaced you in the company. And now Charles has rejected you. You walk backstage, behind the lofty proscenium, as though lost in a dream. As the hours pass, you can concentrate on only one thing, one person, Kitty Brock. She's the cause of it all, isn't she? Then in the distance, you hear the chorus rehearsing for tonight's performance of Faust. Concealed behind a flat, you watch your daughter Felice as she sings, so young, so alive. Then another voice becomes audible. Kitty Brock rehearsing your role, the role of Margarita. Her voice taunts you, doesn't it, Oriane? You begin to tremble with rage, and then a thought flickers through your mind.
Jewel song. Margarita gazes into a mirror. A mirror.
The hatred you feel for Kitty Brock swells within you. You turn, rush downstairs to the property room. It's the first time you've been below the opera house. You find the air damp, faded. And as you walk along the dark corridor, you see a dim light at the far end and you hear Peppo.
Chérie, te revoir si belle dans ces miroirs.
Peppo! Peppo!
Oh. It is the fine lady come to visit Peppo, huh? What an honor you accord me.
Peppo, I am in need of your help. I have no time to lose. I must have the mirror. Peppo, please give it to me.
A moment. For what reason do you want it?
For what reason do you think? The Brock woman. She has robbed me of my fiancé, my position, everything.
Everything, my lady? Or is it just that she has robbed you of your lover?
Are you going to give me the mirror?
Yes, I will give you the mirror. Take it.
Thank you. And then now, Peppo.
Yes?
You leave the building and stay away until after the performance tonight.
Oh, but Madonna, Mr. Cassini, what will he say when he asks me what shall I say?
You were called away suddenly. Somebody in the family was ill. Anything, I don't care. It will be safer. If you are not here, they cannot blame you. An accident. Someone picked up the wrong mirror by mistake.
Yes, I understand. Yes, I will go immediately.
You watch Peppo back out of the room, twisting the tattered cap in his hands. The moment he's gone, you pick up the mirror. Quickly, you slip it under your wrap and hurry to your dressing room. You put in a call to Union Station, reserve a compartment on the late train to New York. Moments later, you're backstage, to the left wing, where the garden sequence paraphernalia is set and waiting. You hurry to the jewel box on the table. Quickly, you remove the mirror from the box. Replace it with the deadly one you got from Peppo. Yes, Oriane. In a fraction of a second, the deed is accomplished. Back at your apartment, you spend the rest of the afternoon packing for your trip to New York. Then shortly before 6 that evening, you hurry from the building. Your train doesn't leave till 9:40, and you decide to have dinner at a quaint little Italian restaurant not far from Union Station. As you approach the waiting cab, the driver opens the door for you.
Oriane, wait!
You turn, see Giulio Cassini hurrying down the street towards you.
Hurry, driver. If you're at Italian restaurant, Commercial Street.
Oriane, wait! Wait, Oriane!
You're relaxed, aren't you, Oriane? Hours later, as the train pulls out of the station, you lean back in your chair, give yourself up to the slow, hypnotic rhythm of the wheels on the track. Wheels that every moment take you further away from the opera house, where the performance is now in progress. Suddenly, a picture flashes through your mind. The opera. Kitty Brock and the Jewel Song. You can see her now, can't you? Singing into the mirror. You can almost hear the high-pitched trill and then the glass shattering.
It is too bad, Madame Brock, that your first performance with this company shall be your last.
About 10 o'clock, you step out of your compartment, start down the narrow corridor toward the club car, and then suddenly your ears become alert. Your brain starts spinning wildly as two voices emerge from a compartment up ahead.
Oh, come along, darling.
That's Kitty Brock's voice. What is she doing on this train?
A moment later, you see her step into the corridor, followed by Charles. You stand there dumbfounded, unable to move, unable to think.
Kitty, don't you think we ought to wire Julio?
When we arrive in New York, we'll be soon enough.
Do you think he'll be mad because we eloped? Missing the performance tonight, I mean.
He'll be furious, of course. But who cares?
I doubt very much if Orion will ever sing for Cassini again.
Yeah, that's true, I suppose. Well, it's Felice. She's quite good, you know.
Felice? Who is?
Orion's daughter. You didn't know.
Felice. Felice. Oh, no.
Oh, but Felice will have to sing. She's the only one left who knows the role.
Conductor! Conductor!
Yes, ma'am?
I must get off the train immediately. You must stop.
Oh, I'm sorry, ma'am.
I've got to get back to Los Angeles.
Well, we'll be in Pasadena in a few minutes. You can get off there, take a cab.
What time is it now?
10 minutes after 10, ma'am.
All right. I get off at Pasadena. C-R-1-7-9-4. Busy. Oh, no. It can't be. It can't. Try operator. Who was keeping the operator?
Operator.
I'm trying to reach Creston 1794, but I keep getting busy signal. Will you check that for me, please?
That is a toll call, madam.
Oh, hurry, it's important.
The number is Creston 1794?
Yes. Yes, do hurry.
One moment, please.
Oh, Felice. Who was taking her so long? Operator! I've got to reach Felice.
Hello?
Yes, operator.
Creston 1794 has been reported out of order.
Out of order?
I'm sorry if you'll place your call later.
But it's important. I must get through somehow. Please, is there anything you can do?
I'm sorry, the line is out of order.
Oh! Taxi! Taxi!
Yes, ma'am.
The Opera House in Los Angeles. Can you make it in 20 minutes? I've got to be backstage before 10:40.
20 minutes? That's pretty quick, lady.
Make it quicker if you can. Don't worry about traffic fines. I pay for everything. Please hurry. It's a matter of life and death.
The Whistler will return in just a moment with the strange ending of tonight's story.
This is a firearm safety PSA. No matter how you feel about current gun laws, everybody should know the most critical rules about handling any firearm. Rule 0. All guns are always loaded. Rule 1. Never point a gun at anything you are not willing to destroy. Rule 2. Keep your finger off the trigger until your sights are on target and you have made the decision to shoot. Rule 3. Be sure of your target and what is beyond it. A public safety message from WMFO in Medford, Tufts Educational Radio.
Gun safety. WMFO, Medford.
Signal Deluxe batteries deliver up to 35% more power for quick, dependable starting. So before you buy any battery, stop by your Signal service station. Find out the liberal trade-in your Signal dealer will offer you on today's finer, longer life battery.
Yeah, I'm trying to play through this ad.
Now, back to the Whistler.
But the original air date for this Last Curtain is the 13th of February, 1949.
It's a race against time, isn't it, Oriane? The minutes tick away, precious minutes. And finally, your cab roars into downtown Los Angeles. You must reach the opera before the jewel song begins, before your daughter Felice, as Margherita, sings into the deadly mirror you had hoped would shatter in Kitty Brock's face. Then, as you're within half a block of the opera house...
Driver, what's the matter? Why are you stopping?
Sorry, lady, I can't run over the car in front of me.
Can't you go around there?
Sorry again, that's impossible.
All right, here's your fare. Keep the change. I run the rest of the way. I must get backstage before 10:40.
Well, lady, you can't get out here. Be careful.
A small crowd had gathered near the opera house, stunned by the news of the tragedy. They saw Giulio Cassini slip out the side entrance with Felice Donati. They watched the sobbing girl, a handkerchief covering her face, being assisted toward the waiting ambulance.
Now, my dear, everything will be all right. Please, please, let us through. Let me help you. Please.
Cassini, Giulio.
Now, take it easy, Felice. Now, we're all right.
Hours later in the hospital waiting room, Giulio Cassini, hands clasped behind his back, stood by the window staring out into the night. The room was quiet except for the gentle sobbing of the woman who sat nearby. Giulio turned, placed his hand on her shoulder, and then a door opened softly. A white-clad figure stepped out into the hall and approached them.
Doctor?
Oh.
Doctor, how
you
is
are
she?
Mr. Giulio Cassini?
Yes, yes. Will she be all right?
Well, she'll pull through okay. Oh. But her face was cut quite badly by the glass.
Oh, may we see her now?
Oh, this is Felice, Doctor, the injured lady's daughter. May we go in?
For a moment, yes. Come along. Oh,
thank you. Come along, Felice.
Mr. Cassini?
Yes?
Do you know how this accident happened?
Well, according to the cab driver, Oriane jumped from her taxi, started to run toward the opera house, saying she had to get there before 10:40. She did not see the car approaching.
10:40?
Yes, that is just the time when the jewel song starts.
And that's when Beppo rushed onto the stage, stopped the show. He grabbed the mirror from me and broke it into 1,000 pieces.
Whistle be your signal for the Signal Oil program, The Whistler, each Sunday night at this same time. Brought to you by the Signal Oil Company, marketers of Signal gasoline and motor oil, and fine quality automotive accessories. This is CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System.
Whistler, The Last Curtain. Again, I tracked down that original air date, the 13th of February, 1949. Again, it was a request from the neighborhood psychotherapist who walks quite a bit in the morning. But again, I've never actually heard him whistle. From some of these liner notes, indicates that the Whistler originated on the West Coast. Was it a West Coast program before it got picked up by New York, and I guess it was CBS. Is that what it said there? I was trying to queue up the second half of the double bill, which we'll get on to that. It's going to be a Western, but it's not going to be James Stewart as the six shooter. This one is in consideration to follow the six shooter when I've played out all the episodes of its soul season. This is one, it's actually a pretty famous television show for a while. I'll go ahead and start this. This was the 5th of February, 1956 is the original air date for this. You're listening to Arthur in the Grand Hour, 91.5 FM, WMFO, WMFO.org, Tufts Freeform Radio.
City and in the territory on West, there's just one way to handle the killers and the spoilers, and that's with a U.S. Marshal and the smell of gun smoke. Gunsmoke, starring William Conrad. The transcribed story of the violence that moved west with young America. And the story of a man who moved with it.
I'm that man. Matt Dillon, United States Marshal. The first man they look for and the last they want to meet. It's a chancy job, and it makes a man watchful and a little lonely.
Sam?
Kitty, what do you have?
I'm going out to Delmonico's for something to eat. If Marshal Dillon comes in, tell him to wait, will you?
I'll send him on to Delmonico's.
No, he's to wait here. It's Doc who's trying to find him.
Oh.
You look tired, Sam.
Ought to. I've been tending bar for 12 hours steady.
Well, what happened to the help you hired last night?
You had the wrong idea, Kitty.
Huh?
I'm in business to sell whiskey, not give it away to anybody who needs a drink and can't pay for it.
Is that what he was doing?
It was till I caught him at it.
Hello, Kitty. Sam.
Oh, Marshal.
Matt, you're to stay right here at the bar.
What?
I promised Doc if you came in, I'd keep you here. He's been looking all over town for you.
Well, I thought Doc was delivering a baby down on Salt Creek.
Well, he got back about a half hour ago.
Oh, what does he want me for?
It's about some trouble with a man and his wife called Tebbs.
Tebbs?
Well, not where he delivered the baby. This was in a sod hut about a mile above the crossing.
Ah, well, what about him?
Here he comes. He'll tell you. Here he is, Doc.
Oh, fine. So you're a good girl, Kitty. Yes, you are. You're a good girl. I might never have found him.
What's all this about these Tebbs people, Doc?
Well, they're having trouble, Matt.
Oh, what kind of trouble?
Well, I stopped by to say hello and get acquainted. And, well, you know.
Oh, sure.
But the woman, she didn't act like she wanted anybody around. And then I heard the man yell at me from inside. She tried to stop me, but I went in anyways. He was lying there on the bed, Matt, with a bad knife wound in his leg.
Oh?
Yes. It's festered and it's given him a fever, and I don't think he can walk with it.
Did he say what happened?
Well, he claimed it was an accident, but he was holding a six gun under that blanket, Matt.
Well, what for?
For his wife. He's scared to death of her. I think she knifed him, and I think she's waiting for a chance to finish him off. You better get down there, Matt. Maybe too late already.
Isn't this the Tab's place, all right, Mr. Dillon?
That's the way Doc described it, all right, Joseph. Including the wife out there hoeing in the dirt.
She's letting on she don't see us.
Yeah. I didn't expect we'd be very welcome here.
Just wait till she finds out you're a marshal.
And I'm not going to tell her, Chester. Not right off, anyway. Hello, ma'am.
Hello.
We were looking for a drink of water.
Creek's over yonder.
Yeah, but you got a well here.
Water's no better than the creek.
Okay, we'll use the creek. But first I'd like to talk to your husband.
My husband? What about?
Oh, just wanted to get acquainted.
He ain't here.
Ah. Well, we go get a drink, then we'll come back and wait for him.
No.
Who are you talking to, Flory? Who's out there?
Nobody. Now you stay quiet. He's feeling poorly, mister. I don't want nobody bothering him.
Well, we won't bother him.
You stay out of there. Well, then I'm coming, too.
You better wait outside, Justin.
Yes, sir. That hut can't hold more than three people anyway.
Hello.
I knew I heard somebody.
Your wife says that you're sick, Tibbs.
I told you to leave him alone. I told you not to be troubling him.
Well, I'm only being neighborly, ma'am. If he's sick, maybe I can help.
So you're a neighbor, mister?
Well, my partner and I are planning a homestead nearby. As soon as we can decide on a good piece of land.
Now, you get it staked out, then you come see us, mister. Everything will be fine then.
Flory, don't be that way. Me being sick and her having to do all the chores makes her kind of edgy, mister. And being up nights, it's what's hardest on her.
I ain't complaining.
Yeah, I know, Flory, but I can tell. Mister, I got an idea. Said you wanted to help.
Sure. Anything I can do.
Be willing to sit up with me tonight?
No, Ben.
You need some rest, Flory. You see, I got a fever, mister. I get to tossing him asleep. I throw off a blanket, all like that.
You don't look like you've been sleeping at all.
Will you do it, mister? Sit up with me?
No. No, he ain't gonna sit up with you.
Oh, why not, ma'am? I don't mind.
Because I ain't gonna sleep in here with no stranger about, that's why.
Oh.
Well, I didn't think she would.
Look, I'll tell you what. I'll spend the night on the ground outside, if you don't mind.
We do mind.
Flory, you ain't acting like a wife. You ain't acting like a wife at all.
You can stay, mister.
Now, fine, good.
Wait a minute, mister.
Yeah, what?
I was just wondering if maybe tomorrow, if you'd be willing... I ought to get into Dodge and see the doc. There's a wagon outside.
No, you don't.
Oh, shut up.
Well, sure, we'll take you in, mister. We'll be glad to.
We really gonna drive him into Dodge tomorrow, Mr. Dillon?
Yeah, we better.
Well, why don't she want him to go?
Well, I guess Doc was right, Chester. She put a knife in him, and now she's trying to finish him off.
Well, if he's got a six gun under his blanket, why don't he just shoot her?
Then who'd take care of him, feed him? He's getting more fever every day, and he can hardly walk anyway.
Well, it sure can't last much longer with him staying awake, trying to keep an eye on her all the time.
Yeah. Chester, I think I'm going to go in there and tell him who I am and load him into a wagon tonight. This has gone on long enough.
I reckon you better, Mr. Dillon.
Yeah. Where's your wife?
She went around back, mister.
Look, Tebs.
Hmm?
I'm going to take you into Dodge tonight.
You are? Oh, that'll be fine. Oh, except for Flory.
You want to tell me what's going on here?
What do you mean?
I'm not a homesteader, Tebs. I'm a U.S. Marshal.
Huh?
That's right. And I'm going to take you into Dodge, Flory or no Flory. You need sleep and you need care.
Oh, well...
Now, you can tell me your story when you want to.
No, Oh, there's no story. I just got hurt a little, is all. Here, look here, Marshal. You gotta understand, Flory. She don't mean what she says. She gets all riled up over nothing. You know how women are.
What are you trying to say, Tebs?
Well, I'm fine right here. And Flory, she's a good nurse, Marshal.
You mean you don't want to go to Dodge?
Oh, shucks, I'll be up and around in a couple of days. Don't you worry about me.
All right. But I'll be back. Chester. Chester.
Get your hands up and turn around, Marshal.
She's got a shotgun, Mr. Dillon.
And I'll use it, too.
She was listening at the window.
Now my hands are up, Flory.
I'm taking your gun.
She got my gun, too, Mr. Dillon.
You're making a bad mistake, Flory.
I won't have you nor nobody else meddling where you don't belong. Now get your horses and ride out of here.
All right. But we'll be back.
I'm going to be sitting right by that door, Marshal. First thing I see or hear gets a load of buckshot.
It won't be us, Flory. But we'll be close enough to hear if you do shoot somebody.
I couldn't help it, Mr. Dillon. She come ooching around the side of the hut, and I didn't even see that cussed shotgun until it was too late.
Yeah, neither did I.
What are we gonna do?
There's nothing we can do tonight. But tomorrow, in the daylight... Now we got our rifles. We'll think up some tricks for her.
See her on the horse, Mr. Dillon.
She must be inside the hut, Chester.
Well, I hope she don't come charging out of there with that shotgun blazing.
It would be a bad way to start the day, wouldn't it?
I can't think of none worse.
especially on an empty stomach.
Now, there she is.
Hmm?
Now, wait a minute. It's all right. She isn't armed.
Come on over here, Marshal.
Now, what's she up to?
Yeah, it's hard to say with a woman like that.
I thought you'd be back this morning.
Yes, and I told you we would. We're going to take your husband into Dodge, ma'am.
You're too late, Marshal.
Too late?
He died during the night.
What?
It's too much for his heart. He always did have a weak heart.
Where is he, Florey?
Lying there inside, Marshal. Why? Don't you believe me?
I believe you, but I want to have a look at him.
What for? I got him all wrapped up in his blanket, ready for burying. You'll go dig a grave for him if you want to help so much.
All right, we'll dig a grave after I've seen him.
You got no respect for the dead, Marshal?
It's the living that bothers me right now, Florey. I'm going to have a look at him now, Florey.
You're no better than a coyote, Marshal.
You don't have to watch.
I'll go ahead. I don't care.
I'll unbutton his shirt here. All right, what did you use, Florey?
Use? For what?
I might have known he couldn't stay awake forever. He fell asleep and you stabbed him in the heart with a needle or something. That doesn't show much, does it?
All right, I'll tell you. Don't matter none anyway. I killed him.
Why would you want to kill your husband, Florey?
My husband. He wasn't my husband. He killed my husband, Marshal. We never seen him before. He rode by here and started trouble. Over me it was. My husband pulled a knife, but he shot him. And I swore I'd kill him for it, and I did.
Why didn't you explain all this to Doc Adams when he was out here? Or to me last night?
And let you take him and hang him? I had to kill him myself, Marshal. It's a promise I made my husband while he was dying.
And I'm going to have to arrest you.
You can't do nothing to me for this.
You murdered a man, Florey.
You're wrong, Marshal.
You just admitted it.
Well, I ain't doing no more talking. You take care of him and we'll go into Dodge. But I won't be in jail long, you'll see.
Ah, good morning, Chester.
Good morning, Mr. Dillon. What you got there?
That's a mail.
Oh, did you pick it up?
Yeah, I picked it up. I was down there anyway. How's Florey?
She ain't said a word.
Go get her, will you?
Go get... What for?
She was right, Chester. I can't keep her in jail.
But, Mr. Dillon, we just
Go
can't
get
all...
Go get her, will you?
Yes, sir. Come on out, Florey.
You turning me loose?
Not me. Mr. Dillon is.
It's about time.
Morning, Florey.
Not much of a jail you got, Marshal.
Well, it's not strong enough to hold you. Of
course it ain't.
Florey, the man you killed, you told me you've never seen him before, huh?
I never had.
What was his name?
George Bassett.
What else did you know about him?
He was wanted. Dead or alive.
He was wanted?
I got a circular on him in the mail, Chester. It's there on my desk.
A circular? Well, forevermore.
How did you know he was wanted, Florey?
He said so.
Now, that's hard to believe.
Now, he told me. When he was bothering me. Before he killed my husband. He said one more wouldn't matter. I guess he planned to kill me, too, later. Only he hadn't figured on getting cut up. And he needed me after that.
Yeah. Now, why didn't you tell me this out there, Florey?
I didn't think you'd believe me, Marshal.
Yeah, well, maybe you were right. I never heard of George Bassett before.
You heard of him now?
Yeah. There's going to be some reward money coming, Florey.
Marshal?
Yeah, what?
You say it.
Say what, Florey? Oh,
please.
How? That you don't want the money? That you wouldn't take it?
Thank you, Marshal. Thank you for saying it right. I feel some cleaner for that. Goodbye.
Goodbye, Florey.
Produced and directed by Norman McDonald, stars William Conrad as Matt Dillon, U.S. Marshal. Our story was specially written for Gunsmoke by John Meston, with music composed and conducted by Rex Corey. Sound patterns by Tom Hanley and Bill James. Harley Bear is Chester and Georgia Ellis is Kitty.
You, Sheriff. You're too good a man. Look over your left shoulder. We're on our way to Boston to get some clam chowder.
Bye-bye.
February 1956. And considering when this run of six shooters is over, to go ahead and using Gunsmoke for the western portion of my double bill. That being said, I believe there was a season 2, episode 8. legal revenge. James Arness doing. James Arness doing. Playing Marshall Dillon. And everybody's favorite TV show. Not much to report. The summer schedule should be coming out. I gotta figure out how to sign up to continue this fine programming of the Grand Hour, because I'm gonna bring you, to close out the show, I started a little bit early to try and get this in for the archive listeners who should be at work or tending to their kids or their pets, changing their oil, anything like that. Started it a little early, so I'll end it a little early. I believe Radio Morning with Gaz is scheduled up next. But I'm going to continue playing from Bird Songs of Dooryard Field and Forest. It's very nice. These are some of the premier recordings. The late, actually, that the Stillwells were doing this pretty much when the Whistler and Gunsmoke would have been on the air. A retired couple sold everything, drove around the country recording Birds. This is from Volume 1, Bird Songs of Dooryard Field and Forest, featured only here with Arthur in the Grand Hour. Today is the 9th of May. Have a good day, folks. Thanks for listening.
Often begin their varied songs with two or three similar notes or phrases, followed by rapid notes of different pitches and qualities. Here are four song sparrows with a few notes from a bluebird near the end. Voices of lark sparrows and song sparrows are rather similar. The song sparrow has an occasional squeaky note. Listen now to the lark sparrow, who sometimes puts in a buzzy note.